I'm Gab, he's Jules. We're back in the studio. Doesn't it feel wonderful, Jules?
I feel like being at home, you know.
Pretty much so. And look, it gets even better because we have a packed show because obviously a lot of stuff going on. We're going to talk about all the big teams losing in this weird midweek. City, Bayern, Juve, and of course, Barcelona, which brings up one, Ronald Koeman.
Bye-bye.
You can say his name now, yeah?
Bye-bye. I'm still debating.
You're not quite there yet. Yeah. Obviously, that dominates. All right. We talked about it on the FC show last night. I understand why Ronald Koeman is gone. I don't think he should have stayed. We were told all along it was about money. But I have a problem with how this happened, okay?
Yeah.
It's not as if you discovered last night that Ronald Koeman has issues and has all these problems, right? And especially last night against Rayo Vallecano, for those who missed it, they won 2-1. Sorry, Rayo beat them 1-0. Sorry, 2-1. 1-0. El Tigre, Radamel Falcao, putting Gerard Piqué in his pocket. But Barcelona actually didn't play badly. What I meant was they could have won 2-1. So Junior Dest missing a sitter, Memphis Depay missing a penalty. So I always look at how teams play and they played well enough to win with all the problems and all the issues, and Koeman's not right. So when you sack somebody immediately after that, when we find out, like, sort of 3 hours later, there's an emergency meeting of the board and blah, 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 I think to myself, well, what's up?
I don't know, but why would you wait the next day or the day after? Thomas Tuchel was sacked after a 4-0 win against Strasbourg.
Yeah.
Carlo Ancelotti was sacked after the last game of the season at Everton pretty much in the dressing room.
Because
that's what clubs do.
Okay, so those aren't good examples because Carlo Ancelotti, afterwards, you had a whole summer to go and find a replacement. But, and Thomas Tuchel was sacked, I think, on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, right?
Yeah, still, you know, so often it's like that. Why would you wait the next day?
Well, I think for the simple reason that, well, first of all, you don't sack him, right? This only makes sense if you already have your replacement lined up. Okay, if you already know he's going to come in. Sergi Barjuan, and I don't mean immediately for the game this weekend. Sergi, one of my favorite players, by the way,
he's
at Barcelona,
lovely
tremendous
guy.
Player. He's going to move up and he's going to take charge of the team this weekend. But I think the worst thing, what Barcelona do not need now, is a situation like this knee jerk where, oh, we lost to Rayo, this looks bad, let's get rid of him. Let's throw Sergi in there. And then now let's go and find somebody. So the question is Xavi. Xavi is the guy who's been most mentioned. Is he lined up? Yeah. Are we taking that as red?
Yeah, I think he's lined up. And I think,
are you sure we're not giving Barcelona too much credit here?
I don't think so. But yeah, you're right. Maybe considering the shambles that this club is in right now, maybe. But I think Laporta and Xavi have been talking for a while. I'm not just saying about coming in and replacing Koeman, but they've been talking, right. And I think they know that Xavi was just waiting for the offer to come, for the moment to do it.
So you're suggesting he's waiting for the offer to come because there was no offer before?
Yeah, but I think they probably would have talked and spoken and said, okay, if we sack him, would you take it? Would you come? But not more than that. Now that I think this is just the last straw that made them. It's not that they lost Rayo. It could have been anyone. It's just the fact that once again you could see there's no direction, there's no future under Koeman. Get rid of him now. Bring Xavi in. That could be not for this weekend against Alaves. Midweek against Kiev next week, maybe not either. But the following weekend, I think he will be there probably. I think this is going to be a quick process.
See, I go back to my original point. If they hadn't lost against, if Des puts the ball in. In fact, I don't want to say Serginho Dest is the center of the universe who decides the future of. But if Serginho Dest scores the goal in the Clásico, maybe it's a different situation. But just see this game. Serginho Dest and Memphis Depay score, and they win this game. Is Koeman right now still the Barcelona manager?
Probably. But the issues are still there. You can't.
No, that's fine. I'm not debating that. But if this is the case, then the club are going about it the wrong way.
Well, it helps them making the decision, Gab, when they're not winning. So you lost the Clásico. Remember after the Clásico, we said, okay, what happens now if they lose to Rayo? And then it's Alaves at home. And then you go to Kiev, which we both said is a huge game for them because losing Kiev, and you can say goodbye to the Champions League pretty much. So, but you can't, this is such an important time that losing to Rayo is not the right start to it. So you already had your doubts before. It's not like if you'd been winning everything and then you lose to Rayo and you could say, okay, it's an accident.
No, that's fine. But on the flip side, it's not like you played badly. You actually played reasonably well and you did enough to win for the limits of the Barcelona team.
But something is not working. Something was not working in there.
But something hasn't been working all season.
Exactly. So get rid. Quickly.
I don't think we need to have a big Koeman retrospective. I think we both agree that, you know, he was the wrong guy, I think, in the wrong place. Yeah. I sometimes feel like, you know, the whole Meskion club, we only have X players. Something of a marketing tool, frankly. Mm-hmm. Because there was nothing in Koeman's
exactly.
CV at that
if he'd
point.
Never played for Barcelona before, he would have never been appointed.
Somebody made the parallel, by the way, that two guys who scored European Cup winning goals and then have gone back to manage their clubs.
Yeah.
Both under a lot of pressure. Koeman gone. The other one, of course,
yeah.
won Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But yeah. What I don't get, and it's hard because when you talk about Barcelona, there's so much stuff in there, right? The feeling of how Barcelona should play. Yeah. It is very demanding. I just want to put this out there. We don't see any chance, or there's no reason why they should move away from whichever way you wish to define it. The whole cry, take the ball, pass the ball, yeah. blah, blah, blah. They're not going
to
do that.
Definitely not. And they have the players to do it. And that's the thing, Gab, is that Koeman was never a good manager. He was not a good manager. Okay, he was a good head coach for the Netherlands national team. I give him that. But for every time at club level, this was just not good enough. I don't think he has... I don't think he has the tools, even in his own personality, to be able to develop a team like this and make them play the way they should be playing. Because I still think that this is a team, the one that started against Rayo, okay, this is not the starting 11 I would pick. I would not pick Sergio Roberto at right back. I would not put Dest at right winger. But those players together should play far better style of football than what Koeman has been doing for the last 18 months. 100%. So I don't think they should go away from anything apart from bringing someone who will actually teach this team and those players, the one that need be, to be taught, how to play the Barcelona way. And too often we say about a club, oh yeah, their DNA, the West Ham way, the Manchester United way, the this way, the that way. But at least for Barcelona, they have a proper way to play.
Yeah, I think this is important because, you know, ultimately, the way is winning, right?
Exactly.
And so, you know, you can go out and there's different ways to do it. Right now, I think we live in an age where most teams who win tend to play front foot football. They tend to have technically gifted players who yeah. can play possession and do press, right? Take the game to the opposition. That's generally, and there's a whole bunch of reasons for it, and that's a discussion for another time, right? But in some ways, the idea of possession, I think the pressing element was really largely added by Pep. I don't think it was as much a part of when Cruyff was there, even though Pep obviously always gives credit to Cruyff and whatever. But the attacking impetus, the attacking ethos, the technical players, they've always been there for Barcelona, yeah. right? So I don't think that's going to change. And it's not a hard transition to marry an idealized Barcelona style with winning football. What I wonder about is I feel like, you know, Xavi kind of went into a black hole in 2016 when he moved to Qatar, first as a player for Al Sadd and then obviously as a manager. You know, I don't know. I'm not in a position to evaluate the job he did there.
You've seen some clips, right, of the way they play.
I've seen stuff. Yeah, I've seen people passing the ball and scoring goals. But I also know that in the Qatari league, there's three teams: Al Sadd. This is really granular. I don't even know how to pronounce it. And one other who generally have more money and bigger budgets and owners who are more interested in it. And they're better run and better organized and they tend to win. He's won one title in 3 years he's there. I'm not in any position to judge. My concern to some degree is he's been away from Europe since 2016. He's a super bright guy. The opportunity to spend some time with him back as a player. He's super, super smart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But equally, some of the warning signs. Other than Al Sadd, he has only ever played for the same club. He's played for different managers, but again, all managers who've been kind of in that Barcelona mold, right? with the exception possibly of Van Gaal, who still, when he was there the first time around, really tried to play that type of football. But the others, whether it's Rijkaard or Guardiola, obviously Luis Enrique. I'm just wondering, how long will the adjustment period be? And are we potentially heading towards another Pirlo situation?
I think it's a win-win situation for him. And that's why he will take the job. I think he cannot lose. If things don't go great, Koeman has left him a mess anyway. The club is a mess right now. It's a transition period that has been going on for 18 months. There's so much to do. This is a team that has lost confidence, and we saw that in the Rayo game completely. Not as strong as the teams in the past. So if it doesn't go well, it's easily Koeman's fault. If it goes well, and it can go well, because I think this is a guy who can inspire this team, not like Koeman did. But Xavi comes in with all the aura, the charisma, the know-how, because, again, this is, you know, that DNA that we were talking about, he's got it. He knows what to do. He knows exactly the drills to make them play the Barcelona way and the way he plays. I mean, last night I went and watched some outside clips. And, of course, I know there were clips that were there for a reason. I didn't watch the whole game, and I don't expect them to play like that the whole 90 minutes of games.
Yeah, I also wouldn't expect outside social media a team to upload clips of them losing to Al Garrafa or whatever.
But still, some of the stuff that they played and the way they built from the back and the passing and the movement was great. At that kind of level, I know, but it's also with players that are not as good as the ones in the Barca squad right now. So
teams who aren't as good as the ones Barcelona
plays. So it's all relative. I give you that. But I still think that Xavi can walk in that dressing room and say, okay, I've seen what you've done. This is the way we're going to go at it. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to work on. That movement, that pattern of play, everything. And I really believe he can do that. But for me, he can't lose. Because even if the second half of the season now, slightly more, is not a success, he can't be blamed for it, because he's arriving.
I'll tell you what would be very problematic for him is if he comes in, they don't finish top four, which is entirely possible. They get knocked out of the Champions League in the group stage, which is entirely possible.
Yeah.
Suddenly Barcelona are down another 120 million, something like that, in lost revenue. And so then there's more cuts in the summer, and then more people have to be sold, and then nobody else comes in. And then people say, oh, look, here's more guys. You know, Gabi and Nico look good in what we've seen so far. Okay, here's Bebo and Tomate. Put them in, too. And or whatever. Or go back and play Aguero every game.
But then
game, I mean, well, no, and then he's there. And then people eventually turn. And then you've kind of burned your shot at Barcelona. Because, look, there's a lot of former Barcelona players, right, out there who've gone into management. Not all of them get to manage Barcelona.
Yeah.
I think Xavi's a smart guy. I think he will have done his homework. I would hope. First thing I do is I say, Joan, I want to see all the books at the club. I want to know what the plan is in terms of technical director and whatever else. And I'm going to take all these books, all this accounting stuff, and I'm going to give it all to these accounting nerds over here, and they're going to tell me if you're telling the truth. Because, frankly, there's no reason to trust so much about this club because of the way it's been run. Right?
Yeah.
Laporta has to go and earn trust.
Yeah.
You know, I know he didn't create most of the mess, but, you know, he still needs to earn trust in that sense.
Definitely.
Because we saw how the Messi thing played out. We saw how the Griezmann thing played out. He needs to earn trust, right? I just wonder, and I say this as somebody who really, really likes Xavi, whether maybe the best thing for him wouldn't have been an intermediary step in Europe, rather than jumping straight into a dumpster fire.
Okay, but then Pep, you've got examples and counter-examples and everything. Yeah, Pirlo didn't work out, and maybe Pirlo wasn't ready. But Pirlo, apart from a few games with the under-19s at Juventus, had no experience whatsoever, not even in Qatar.
Yeah.
And Pep with the B team at Barcelona. And there's other examples that have worked to do the way Barca is doing the Xavi way, and others that show that it didn't work.
I'm not making the analogy with Pep. I'm not buying that analogy, because Pep took over a team that had won the Champions League 3 years before, that was not in a financial mess,
of course,
that had Lionel Messi. So I don't think
But in terms of lack of experience, I meant.
Yeah, but it's not just the experience, it's that this guy's been in another universe for the last 5 years.
I understand that, and I think there is a risk, and that's a bit of a gamble. But just to go back on your point about the squad and maybe players leaving, I think if you ask Xavi now, look, you can start fresh with a lot of kids from La Masia, from the academy, and yeah, we might have to get rid of Dembele and Coutinho. I think they say, okay,
all right.
That's
well,
fine.
Let's do this forensically. Let's get a little like you know, I love doing this stuff.
Yeah,
right?
I know that was coming.
So, Ter Stegen, you're fine. Yeah, I know he's had a bit of a dip, but whatever. When he's good, I think he's one of the top five goalkeepers in the world, or close to it.
Yeah.
At right back, you've got Sergino Dest. He's young. There's more to come. He might not be your long-term right back, but whatever.
As well.
Center back, I'm assuming Pique is going to exit stage left at some point. I don't see Eric Garcia at all. I don't see him zero.
Please, no.
A lot of very smart people, like Luis Enrique, like Pep Guardiola, obviously think he's good.
Yeah, but no.
Let's let Xavi.
No.
You just know on him.
No, it's a no.
Okay.
It's
you have Araujo.
Yes.
Araujo's fine. Mingues is a squad player.
Yeah.
I think you can still get something out of Lenglet. Obviously, over the summer, you need to have, I think, another center back. At least one.
Because Umtiti eventually at some point will go.
Umtiti, come on.
But you have to make room for one. You need to get rid of one as well.
Of course.
How many center backs are you going to have otherwise?
Jordi Alba, I think you'll get another couple seasons out of him.
Yeah.
I think he had a dip, and now he came back. I think he's been playing better. So I think you're okay for the time being.
And then you've got young Balde, who can potentially improve and do a job at some point, not now, but in 2 years. I'm sure he could be ready.
All right. In the middle of the park, De Jong, fine, untouchable. Busquets, again, do you get it? Can you get another year out of him to train, whatever? There's Pedri's fine.
Yeah.
You need a third man. Is it Nico? Do you need to find somebody?
Gavi?
I'm playing with Gavi means that then you're playing De Jong really in a blocked, deep-lying position.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you've got... I think you need to think about adding a piece there going forward when you can.
Yeah, yeah.
Up front, I'm a little bit lost here. I don't know. I think Aguero signed a two-year deal.
Yeah.
I would cut him loose now. Like, not now, but in the summer. Like,
yeah.
Because you're not part of the future. Like, sorry. Ansu Fati, fine.
Memphis, fine.
Memphis is around, yeah.
Memphis is great.
He's a phenomenal player. Can Memphis adapt? How quickly can he adapt to what
surely
Xavi wants him? I think that's a legit question to ask. Obviously, he's going to be better than other players.
Yeah.
Dembele, I don't know who's going to buy him. The dude's always injured. He's never there.
Did you see that video when the fans are saying hello to the players who are leaving the Camp Nou in their car? So, hola De Jong, hola Pique, even hola Koeman, and then there's an ambulance leaving. Hola Dembele. I thought it was really funny.
I don't know if there's another kid coming through who, you know, you can push out there. But let's always remember.
Yusuf Demir has talent, you know, as something.
There's always risk. There's always risk with these people, right? And I think at some point, their plan is going to have to be sell so that we can bring somebody in the right conditions. And I think it's hard because I you can't sell Coutinho, right?
No,
I think he's another year left after this one, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Dembele is out of contract in the summer, so you could get rid.
Yeah. And then what if Griezmann comes back?
I know.
Can you imagine? So look, there's work to be done.
A lot of work, yeah.
And there are other teams that have other issues, but I think the reality is unless Xavi does really, really well, and again, we don't know, but let me remind everybody, we don't know it's going to be Xavi. We think it's going to be Xavi. That's what's been widely reported.
Yeah, of course.
We're giving them the benefit of the doubt that they have Xavi in the bag. Some people have also suggested that Xavi is some kind of magical contract with Al-Sadd with a clause where he can leave at any time. I'm slightly skeptical about this because if it was there, I'd wonder why Xavi didn't leave before, but who knows? I'm just going to get from you, just from some of your reaction, some of the other early names that came out.
Mm.
For some reason, Pirlo was mentioned, which I'll just go beyond that. I don't think that was going to happen. Marcelo Gallardo is the guy
I would have loved that too.
Okay, so for those who don't know, who aren't as much fans of Argentine or French football as I am, Marcelo Gallardo was a very talented attacking midfielder who played in Spain for a long time. And then he's been at River, where essentially, because River's slightly revolving door, they get players from smaller Argentine clubs, they go there, and then they lose them immediately.
Yeah.
He's done well. I think he's going to win the league this year.
I think they won pretty much everything they could have won,
But, and he plays this type of football that a lot of people really, really like, because a lot of it is possession-based, sharp game. It's not the whole, you know, hack-the-opponent style that we've seen in the past. But, I almost kind of feel like he's been linked with European clubs for 3 years and he just won't come.
It's
waiting for Gallardo is a bit like waiting for Godot, no?
But also, I think he wants to wait for the end. He doesn't want to leave River. That's the problem as well. You know, he would have to leave River right now, and he doesn't want to do it until the end of the year, which you can understand.
He could leave in January and leave Sergi until January.
Nah, come on. Nah, Gab, we said it's a mess already. You can't leave Sergi between now, the end of October, all the way until January. I think they need someone, they need a plan in place before January. So I don't think that works. It's the same with Ten Hag. Okay, I think Ten Hag would do great at Barcelona. I think he ticks a lot of the boxes. But then, one, you have to be persuasive to convince him to leave Ajax and the great things he's got going there to go to this mess. And then if you look at it from his point of view, why would he do that? So then Ten Hag would say, okay, I come, but next summer. Let me finish this season with Ajax. But Barca, I don't think, can afford to do that. Then you go back again to Xavi, who maybe for him it's easier to leave the club that he's currently in and come over straight away and do all that rebuild with him than with someone else.
You sure it's easier for Xavi to leave Al-Sadd? There's all those stories that he tells about.
I really think that when he signed that new deal with them,
man, all those stories that he tells, all the stories that Xavi tells about when he was a little boy, and if you see him in the little Al-Sadd shirt back in the back in the late 80s and he was 8 years old. No, you don't remember that? No, just kidding. We kid Al-Sadd. We kid because we love
him. Yeah, don't come at us.
Other people pull out names from which sound like left fieldy, like
but Roberto Martinez. What do you think of Roberto Martinez? But again, the situation for him is too. It's hard for him to leave 14 months before World Cup, where they will be among the kind of favourites. I can't see him leaving now.
I think there's another big factor with Roberto Martinez, and I'm going to get sociocultural here, but I do think it matters, especially at Barcelona. The thing about Roberto is that, as a manager, you know. He rocks up at Barcelona. People are like, all right, sorry, who are you exactly? You've never worked in Spain. Yeah, you happen to be Spanish. You left, you played here, and then you left when you were very young. You went somewhere in the English lower divisions we've never heard of. Did you manage any big clubs in England? What? Everton, what's that? Right? No, but I'm saying...
That's a bit hard.
No. This is not me saying. This is a sniffy attitude that they have, right?
Maybe.
Belgium. Oh, yeah, Belgium. Hazard, Lukaku, De Bruyne. Oh, what did you do there? Oh, you didn't win anything. Okay, so... He wouldn't have the benefit of political capital to spend, which
sure.
Xavi has when he gets there, right? Yeah. He'd have to come in and he would have to prove himself. And it's weird the way Barcelona works. Koeman is more political capital because, you know, he could speak to Cruyff in three different languages and he played for the club, right? Even though I think Roberto is a better manager than...
100%.
Than Koeman, quite obviously. And maybe probably a better fit for Barcelona stylistically as well. So... Yeah, I don't think that was going to happen either. Other people have pulled out Conte, which, you know, never going to happen.
Talking about DNA,
talk about sort of remote, remote opportunities.
What will you remember from the Dutch guy? And it does all of this tarnish in a way? I was thinking about
his stellar reputation as one of the greatest managers in history.
No, but what he did as a player there. Because he was great as a player.
No.
But now I don't see him, I don't think of him as the 1992 European Cup goal scorer winner. I think about, the guys for the first time ever lost three Clásicos in a row. They're in ninth position, which is the lowest at this stage of the competition in La Liga for 20 years. He's been a shambles. That's more what I think of now when I hear his name than the great player that he was for that club.
Listen, other players have gone back and done poorly as Barcelona managers, right? I have to say this about Koeman. For all his limitations as a coach, and I think they're obvious.
Oh, and the Suarez phone call. Sorry, I forgot.
He has 101 mitigating factors, and I think there's more to come. So he took over Barcelona in a really, really difficult time. When the whole building was crumbling.
That job. No one forced him.
He wanted the job. He was offered the job because he's a football manager. Nobody's going to turn down the Barcelona job.
Well, he was having something great with Holland.
I'm not going to go out and say I give him credit for taking the job. I'm saying is he faced a whole bunch of objective difficulties that other Barcelona managers in the past haven't faced when it was happier times.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I think generally he never threw players under the bus in public, right? The Suarez phone call, horrendous. I would, is there a small possibility? I don't know for certain, but imagine if Koeman speaks, we might get it, that maybe, you know, Bartomeu said, hey, Ronald, say, I talked to Suarez, it's done. He's gone, but you know he needs to hear it from you.
Still, you don't do that.
But yo,
management was an issue from the beginning. Man management, a club like this, in his personality, which is very very brash, as you know, and they never, it was never going to work.
I think I'll put it this way: it might tarnish his legacy as a coach, obviously, but I don't think it tarnishes his legacy as a person. I can't attack Koeman for what he's done. For things that might have been self-serving or selfish or deceitful. He's made mistakes. But I think as a person, he still leaves with his head held high. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Barca. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
All eyes on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Manchester United ahead of their trip to Spurs. Jules, the Manchester Evening News reports that Cristiano Ronaldo is, quote, holding the dressing room together. Is that why Ole is still in a job? Or I want to be unkind.
No. Is that a good thing that he's holding the dressing room together? Or is that more negative in the sense that he's the boss and maybe he's not too keen on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer being the manager? Maybe he would rather Zinedine Zidane or someone else, Antonio Conte, or I don't know.
Think he wants Conte.
Maybe not Conte, but, yeah. But is that...
I think it's important. Look, we're going to reveal another media secret, right? Clubs pay people to speak to the media, and in England they like to call them briefings, which are these things where they tell you as fact and it comes from the club, but you can't say it comes from the club. So I'm pretty sure the Manchester Evening News didn't get a call from Cristiano or show up at his house and be like, hey guys, I'm holding the dressing room together, right? I think the club said, listen, right? Because we all wonder the same thing on Monday.
Yeah.
How are the senior players, Cristiano, Maguire, Bruno, Pogba doesn't really matter at this stage, but how are they reacting, right? And the club said, there's a show of unity. Cristiano stepped up and he's being a leader, which I can believe that Cristiano is being a leader.
Of course,
right?
I hope he is. He should be.
That's an important sign. It doesn't necessarily mean that you can have a united dressing room and not necessarily be united behind Solskjaer. But it is important to have a united.
Of course.
It's important not to have camps.
Of course. And if the club has decided to keep Solskjaer in the job, then the players have to go along anyway. It's not, there's nothing else they can do, to be fair. Gabri also assumed that Manchester United are working on a plan B, which is another manager. Or are they? You would think so. Come on.
Okay, so I'll go back to what I was told. I was told that they were loath to appoint to pursue another permanent manager while Solskjaer was still in the job.
Yeah.
And so that should Solskjaer move on, they would look for an interim manager and then conduct a proper search, almost like a reset button.
Right.
But, even I was thinking, who could do the interim manager job? And I had this conversation with Augie the other day and thoroughly depressed me. Just because it was see what I did? No, but seriously, because of course, the names is,
They Mike need a good seating. If they had a good seating, they could do it. Like a Chelsea good seating.
But they don't, right? Mike Phelan, Darren Fletcher, obviously Giggs is toxic for many reasons.
Nicky Butt. But yeah.
I like Nicky Butt a lot. He has no experience. He's a good servant. He's out, so he could come back in, right? Yeah. He's not been part of it. Steve Bruce, another United legend. No.
Mark Hughes?
That's trolling. Stop it. Jules, just as I was wondering whether Bayern Munich were the best team in the world, they go and they get spanked 5-0 by Borussia Mönchengladbach and my boy Adi Hütter in the German Cup. Let's be clear, the German Cup isn't the Carabao Cup. Look at Bayern's lineup. That was Incredible. The best possible lineup.
Which I think maybe that's where the mistake was. And okay, Nagelsmann might want to win the Pokal because...
Nagelsmann wasn't there. It's Dino Toppi.
I know, but still, he's never won anything.
Right.
And he said, listen, boys, we need to put the strongest team because this is something we take very seriously. This is where the mistake was made. You don't need to play the strongest 11 for a game like this. And I really believe, watching the game, that maybe they were not... too committed, those players. You know, they've played a lot. Lewandowski has played a lot. Kimmich has played a lot. And Upamecano has played a lot. And maybe this was a game where they could have been rested. You could have started Musiala, Coman, they were on the bench. Sule was on the bench. Stanisic was on the bench. Why not them?
Okay.
Why do you play the strongest team against Gladbach in the Pokal?
All right, so they did create chances. They made a bunch of individual errors at the back, which I think they really need to look at. I disagree with you. I think that this was a game in which you're going
to
rest players in the Champions League. You're through, right?
Well, not yet. But yeah, they will as well. They will as well.
Rest those guys there.
A buzzer beater from Maxim Lopez condemns Juventus to a 2-1 home defeat against Sassuolo. Gab, they're now 13 points back behind the leaders, Milan.
Yeah, and so this is Juventus's... one of Juventus's problems, as I see it. Juventus, by the way, they're having their big shareholder assembly today, so they're going to have to give some answers.
Yeah.
They've gone for so long about, winning isn't, they've repurposed that line, even on their shirts at one point. Winning isn't everything, it's the only thing, until the end, and ha ha ha, we take pride in playing terribly, just defending style and winning at the end. What happens is, when they actually play reasonably well, and I thought they really did play, they had a lot of chances.
Yeah.
We saw Chiesa, Morata, and Dybala.
They up after 15 minutes.
They're playing Sassuolo, who are a really good footballing side. That boy Dionisi looks really, really good in his first season in charge. That now nobody gives him credit for it, right? Now all you can do, Allegri, all he can do is trot out the line is, we're idiots because, and we give up a goal on the break in injury time.
Yeah,
right?
True.
And that's not really fair. I saw some positives. Most Juve fans will disagree with me. Most media, they're just going to be happy to go and hammer Juve. That's fine.
But they've been very good just because they scored first in the last few games. And now that they conceded first, they
put it this way. They played better in this game than they did in other games when they won 1-0.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Real Madrid are held by Osasuna 0-0. Jules, not much of a classical bounce there, huh?
Not much. I mean, Osasuna, they're a good team. They're six in the table for a reason. They defended well. They defended deep. And Real never really found the key. Maybe Carlo.
5-3-2.
Yeah. And maybe Carlo, again, in the players that he called up, he said this week that Eden Hazard was fit, but he preferred other players. Okay, but there's a point where that just didn't work out for him and for Real Madrid. I thought it was very disappointing. Overall, even the lack of creativity, everything, I was just not keen.
They had a lot of shots in this game, but a lot of low quality shots.
Exactly.
Again, it's a game they could have won. Carlos said he was happy, but
I know, but you should not be happy with a nil draw like this.
You should be better when you have so much of
exactly.
The ball.
Milan injury crisis continues, Gab, with 8 players unavailable. And yet, my boy Theo comes back after his COVID, and my other boy Giroud scores the only winner against Torino in what was quite a tough game. And Gab, they're 3 points clear at the top now, waiting for Napoli to play on Thursday. Now we record this on Thursday morning. It's been quite an exceptional start of the season, if you think about it. We're seeing 9 wins and 1 draw.
It's been tremendous in these conditions, obviously.
Exactly.
In Europe, they've had, one game like Atletico Madrid, which they played really well and deserved to win. They were terrible against Porto, and they weren't great. They deserve to lose anyway against Liverpool, who are a better side right now. But it'll be interesting to see what happens when the injured players start to come back. But if you believe injuries are random, getting points while you have the injuries is a big, big deal. And so far, so good. And Ibra came on, and little by little, they're easing him back in as well.
Definitely.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Manchester City are knocked out of the League Cup, a competition they had won for the past four seasons. Jose was on penalties. All credit to West Ham. West Ham's B-side in many ways. Ordinarily, I'd say, who cares? It's a Carabao Cup.
Yeah.
But Pep played De Bruyne, Gundogan, Walker, Stones, Mahrez, Sterling. He wanted this.
He wanted this, and he was gutted. We saw it in his post-match. This is their competition very much, and I think it's always nice to win the first trophy of the season and of the year going into next year. It was just not that day. I think they created enough chances to win the game. They had 25 shots or something like that, and Phil Foden ends up missing his pen in the penalty shootout, and West Ham scored all of theirs. So I think it's not a big deal. Of course it's not. They've got much bigger things to think of, like the Champions League and the league, of course, but it's unusual for them to lose like that in the League Cup.
I'd like to credit Angelo.
Of course. It's always nice.
He didn't play, but he was sending good vibes.
Of course. Inzaghi is suspended. Dzeko is rested. But Inter bounced back with a 2-0 win away at Empoli. Gab, this was big, considering Milan kept winning and Napoli and all of that.
It was big. And look, Empoli really angry over missed penalty call early on. The VAR completely missed it. I think they're absolutely right. This is what you call, I think, a professional performance. Alexis Sanchez played really, really well.
Great assist on D'Ambrosio goal, fantastic.
Yeah, you never want to get too excited, is Alexis back or whatever, but again, they needed this. They needed a calm, controlling, no fuss, no drama win. They got it. And they found out what Inzaghi's right-hand man looks like, which is nice.
Yeah, true.
Dimitri Payet gets the equalizer as Nice and Marseille draw 1-1 in that game that was rearranged after the mega brawl in August. Jules?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised that Marseille were quite cautious in that game, quite happy to defend. They went 1-0 down, but then scored just before the break with Payet, as you said, and then defended well in the second half. I expected more from Nice as well going forward. They were a bit frustrated. In the end, it's a draw that doesn't really suit anyone, I guess, from Marseille. You take a draw, it was a kind of a way, it was in Troyes, but you take that and at least you move on. Everybody can move on from what happened when the game was suspended and abandoned.
And doesn't bother Paris Saint-Germain.
Exactly. It's good for us too. Liverpool are through in the League Cup when City were out, winning 2-0 at Preston, but it's all eyes on Salah's contract negotiation gap. Plenty are suggesting that instead of a huge pay rise, he may get a big signing bonus.
Yeah, I don't quite get
how
this
does that work?
Or the benefit of it. I mean, I guess you get more money up front, but it still all comes out of the same pot. And if your concern is you want to keep your wage structure,
exactly,
then it's not like Mane and Firmino, when they have their negotiations, they're going to know he got the big bonus. I guess maybe the advantage is wages remain somewhat lower going forward, so that maybe it's easier to sell him if you
but
want
for
to
Liverpool,
leave.
It's better to spread it over the length of the contract than
for
just
Liverpool,
give him a 20 million pay.
But maybe for Salah, it's better to get the money up front. I don't know. But I have a column up on just some of the things that Liverpool need to be weighing up and how they approach this. And most definitely, this is not a pay him whatever he wants situation. There's a price and a contract duration.
You wrote about
sense.
That for the website as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Chelsea advance in the League Cup, but it takes penalties against Southampton. Jules, what did you learn?
That Kepa is an amazing goalkeeper on penalties, which we knew before. He's pretty special in penalty shootouts, but even more, again, against Southampton. Apart from that, Kai Havertz scored, which I think is very good for his confidence. I thought he played well. It was very much a B team from Chelsea, all the rotation from Thomas Tuchel.
I think from Southampton as well.
And from Southampton too, to be fair, this time of the year. And I guess you take the win and you move on to your next league game now. Gab, I think most of us didn't know who Josh Carvalho was before yesterday, and we all do now.
That's right. I mean, amazing responses. Carvalho means horse, by the way, in case you were wondering in Italian. He's an Australian footballer. He's young, 21, I think. Plays for Adelaide United. Yep. And he came out. And in so doing, some people reported he's the first gay footballer to come out while still playing. He's obviously not. He's the first gay male footballer, I think, that we know. And I think there might have been one or two others over the years, but that's not the point. The point here is that you've got a young man coming out, talking about his experience coming out, talking about all the support he got. He got support. I think just about every football
Everywhere.
Club in the world retweeted him. This is a personal decision people need to make, and it's important to know that they have support, that when it happens, there's so much support. I want to see what happens
when
now
the first,
as things go forward.
Exactly.
I hope Absolutely nothing. And Australia has a history. There was a rugby league guy, I forgot, who I think was one of the first athletes in a team sport to come out while he was still playing. He came out. It was a story for a month. And then guess what? Nobody cared, which is the way it should be.
I want to see. It's obviously their preseason right now. They start next month. I think their first game is against Perth. I looked yesterday. This is where I want this. It's great to have Zlatan Ibrahimovic tweeting you and Kevin De Bruyne and all the clubs and blah, blah, blah. But I think what is the most important is how his peers are going to react. And I don't want any insults on the pitch or anything like that, or any abuse.
No.
And certainly the fans as well when the season gets started. And you're right. I'm hoping that it would be great. But let's see how
I'm hopeful that people look at this and say, you know, this gives me strength. The better deal with it. Whether they choose to come out or not.
Yeah.
IFAB has recommended that the 5-substitution rule be made permanent. Jules still needs a vote. I think it looks pretty much a done deal. Now, of course, it doesn't mean the Premier League will necessarily need to adopt it. They can still continue saying 3 substitutes. Heck, they could go down to 1 substitute.
We disagree on this. I think all the listeners and the viewers know that. I'm not in favour at all of the 5 subs. Okay, maybe a little bit more now until the crazy schedule stops, maybe after the Qatar World Cup, up to the Qatar World Cup. But after that, it has to go back to 3. In my opinion,
it's a permanent change. It's not going to go back to 3.
But league can choose to go to stay with 3 or to go with 5. I'm really hoping that they keep 3. This is fairer. I'm all here for fairness, Gab. That's all I mean. Roma come from behind to beat Cagliari 2-1 thanks to a Lorenzo Pellegrini wonderful free kick. Gab, Mourinho celebrating in the stands. He was shouting because he was suspended. He was in the stand with his earphones. And also on Instagram, as he does now, of course.
Yeah, he pointed out he wasn't allowed in the dressing room, so he took a picture of himself enjoying a snack after the game. This is a really good performance from Roma. I thought they were... You know, they want to go down. They created a lot of chances. Mazzarri, the Cagliari coach, afterwards whinged and whined because that's how he rolls. Yeah. But good performance. And I think, and Mourinho was quick to point out that he played some kid from the youth team as well. So, you know, he's getting his own back. Spurs are also through in the League Cup, beating Burnley 1-0 thanks to Lucas Moura goal. Jules, good warm-up for the mega clash against Manchester United?
I guess after the defeat at West Ham, they needed a win to sort of go back to winning ways. It was a lot of changes. You know, Brian Hill was starting, actually got injured. And that's when Lucas Moura came on. Harry Kane started. It's a good win for them because they needed it before the big clash with United. A great team goal converted by Pedro gives Lazio a 1-0 win over Fiorentina. Gab, signs of Sarri ball or too early?
Still? Not quite yet. Really early.
It's a great goal. It's a great
goal. The goal itself is special. You should go check it out.
Yeah.
I think it was about really the only highlight in the game. I thought Fiorentina were really disappointed. They didn't really build on what happened last weekend.
Yeah.
Lazio didn't play great either. If Sarri ball is going to work, he's got to find room for, I think, Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto. Have your talented players out there. And it's difficult. It's just difficult to learn this, to get the coordination right. No Van Dijk Icardi, Maurizio Icardi update this week. It's getting me more excited for the next episode.
Yeah, of course.
But Paris Saint-Germain, there's always something. So let me ask you about Ander Herrera's adventures in the Bois de Boulogne.
What a club, Gab. I mean, what a club. Ander Herrera leave the Parc des Princes to go home around 8 p.m. on Tuesday night. They had an afternoon with sponsors and partners. The players attended. And to go home, he drives through the Bois de Boulogne, which is this huge park in west suburbs of Paris or West Paris. Renowned for where you can find sex workers.
Streetwalkers.
Yeah, exactly.
Ladies of the night.
Just there on the side of the road. And Ander Herrera says that he stopped at the red light in his car, and one prostitute knocked at his window. By the time he looked, she'd got in, grabbed his phone and his wallet, and said, "You have to drop me on the other side of the park, otherwise I don't give it back to you." So they go back and forth. They end up coming back into where she got in the car, and then he says, "Please, at least leave me my phone." And she just takes the wallet and leaves the car, gets off, and flees. After that, he calls the police and said, "I was robbed in the car." So obviously, there's a lot of questions being asked right now.
What's going on there?
On how did she get in the car in the first place? Because as we all know, the big cars that footballers drive usually lock themselves from inside. And not even big cars.
Do we know what car he was driving?
We don't know what cars. I suspect it's a nice car.
We don't know. It could be.
But your car locks from inside automatically. Indeed. So does mine. And usually no one can... get in from the outside.
Right.
So there's a lot of questions, obviously, of what was Herrera doing there at that time.
I'm also not entirely clear.
It's going to be dodgy.
If he wasn't being threatened in any way, I don't get this whole driving around. He's like, yeah, you want me to drive you around? Yeah, sure, we'll drive to the police station. You know, like,
so I want to believe him. He's an, you know, I love the guy. I want to believe him. He's being supported by the club. There's an investigation going on from the police. There was only 200 euros in the wallet. I suspect his credit cards too, but it doesn't seem to matter too much for him. It was the cash that he said, that he mentioned. This is where we are. I mean, what a club. What a club. This is just, it happens to my club.
It can happen. Crazy. Remember, there's a story involving the original Ronaldo and motels and accidentally running into streetwalkers many, many years
really?
Ago.
Really?
In Rio, I think.
Okay. For the Werder Bremen boss, Florian Kohfeldt has been appointed to replace Mark van Bommel at Wolfsburg. Gab, is this a good choice for my hipster team?
I think it's a very different direction.
Certainly.
Certainly, when he was at Werder Bremen, he played a very, he was a young man. He's still only like 39 years old.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
The problem is Werder Bremen were a club that was kind of imploding from the inside while he was there, which is why things ended up badly.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got a very forward-thinking, attacking impetus. I think it would make Wolfsburg even more hipster. So it is a departure from Van Bommel. Like, I'm not saying Van Bommel's football is negative, but when we think Van Bommel, right, we think kind of like dour, unpleasant, let me take a dive, win by any means necessary. Like honestly, you know, we have stereotypes, right? People talk about Luis Suarez, Sergio Ramos, right?
Yeah.
There's a word in English which rhymes with spithousery, but isn't spithousery, it's something else, about the dark arts.
Yeah.
Van Bommel wrote the book on the dark arts.
He's
as a player.
Of it all.
Just we don't think about it. You think, oh look, it's Holland. They're all nice guys and clogs and tulips. And no, this guy, whatever, man. I wish Kohfeldt well. And I wish Werder Bremen.
It's a good
squad. I wish Werder Bremen well when they come back.
Yeah.
Because they're a legit big club, and I remember watching them growing up.
That's true.
Betis destroy Valencia 4-1, and for now at least are one of four teams who sit joint top of La Liga. Jules, do we need to add them and the wonderful Nabil Fekir to the list of title contenders?
Yeah, and Joaquin, our friend Joaquin, who we love dearly. And Manuel Pellegrini has this team playing really well. I don't know where they will end up. This is a very open La Liga so far, and there may be a time where Real Madrid and Atletico are getting so consistent that you can't keep up with them. But for now, Betis are great. They're great to watch. They were great, although Valencia are not as good as when they started the season. You know, they fall off the cliff a bit now with Bordalas. But still, it was a really good win. It's very entertaining to watch when you watch Betis. So good luck to them if they continue. And I'm glad to see Nabil Fekir in this kind of form because he's been fantastic for them. He wears the armband at times when Joaquin is not on the pitch. It's great. It's absolutely great for him. West Ham have been given permission to increase the capacity of the London Stadium, Gab, to 62,500 seats, which would make it the biggest club stadium in London, overtaking Arsenal. Is that a big deal? Surely.
I think I was just thinking off the top of my head. Is it also the second biggest in the Premier League after Old Trafford?
It would be, I think.
Because I don't think Anfield's up there yet, right?
And Spurs and Arsenal are just under that, so it will go above both of them.
Well, West Ham won the World Cup, so they're a bigger club than Arsenal. So this is the former Olympic Stadium that they built for the Olympics. Yeah. There was some controversy because obviously they left the historic ground, the Boleyn ground at Upton Park. They went there. I don't think it's a nice place, personally, but there's lots of room around
there. There is
so
a lot of room.
Why not expand it? But it also depends. Like, they got permission. Are they going to do it and stump up the money? Does this make the club more valuable at some point when the Davids decide to sell?
Yeah.
I don't know, but it certainly doesn't hurt the club.
No, for sure.
Sevilla held to a 1-1 draw away to Mallorca, which means they miss a chance to go clear at the top. 2 points drop for our friend Julen?
Yes, definitely, Gab. They didn't play well at all. I think Mallorca at times could be tricky to play against, and they took the lead, and especially when they take the lead, you needed an amazing goal by Lamela. I mean, the way he cleans that top corner was pretty special. And you've said it before that Sevilla are certainly not playing as well this season that they were last season, for example, where it was really fluid, they were really entertaining. This time at times it's more difficult, but they were having good results. This one could be a bit of a of like a stop in the progression this season.
I think there was always going to be a bit of a lapse because that 5-3 at the weekend was just
it was
traumatic. It was, you know, even though they won.
Yeah, Fernando Llorente is back. Gab, he was unemployed and signed a contract with Eibar until the end of the season. That's a good pick, right? Okay. It's easy.
I'm going to confess, I don't follow the Spanish second division.
You would think Eibar in the second division.
Well, no, Eibar are second.
Yeah.
And, you know, Eibar are a small club. It is a big deal for them. I think Fernando Llorente brings experience. He brings professionalism. Even if at some point he keeps getting older and he can't run, you still have a big, tall dude in the middle of the box.
Exactly.
And you can pit balls off his head. And he was a very good footballer. And he's a good guy to have around. So, yeah,
and you know that he would have kept fit. Do you know what I mean? He's not the kind of guy to go and put on a lot of weight. And then you know he would have worked hard.
You know what? I think for that specific role, that what he does, you know how like Barcelona, like their plan B with the famous one, where like, oh, let's put Gerard Piqué up front. Chasing. I mean, why not this dude? I'm not saying for Barcelona. You know what I'm saying? Like he could have helped a lot of clubs higher up the food chain.
Completely.
Luka Hernandez has had a 6-month jail term suspended. Jules, this story is so stupid.
So bonkers.
Stupid is the technical scientific term for when the law is out of control.
Exactly. And I'm even crossed that this came up, that he had to go to the tribunal because we knew this will end up like this. Okay, him and his now wife and then girlfriend had their issues at times. They resolved it. They got married. Why are you breaking day?
Yeah. Okay. So I was going to reiterate this for those who missed the earlier installments, right?
This is crazy.
Basically, the two of them, many years ago, before they were married, they had a row. They were issued restraining orders. They were both issued restraining orders. They were
towards each other. Yeah.
Then, whatever, their choice, who's the judge, they got married. So they're husband and wife. So the fact they're husband and wife means they can no longer observe that restraining order. It's very difficult, difficult to consummate their marriage if they so choose. And so they're like, you violated your restraining order, right? And so now you get a 6-month jail term.
Oh, please.
So fortunately, they've suspended
it. But we said from the beginning, it was very unlikely that he would go to jail anyway. But at least this is sorted now, and he will be very happy, and so will Bayern. Authorities in Italy are investigating a number of clubs, Gab, including Juventus and Napoli, over players trading. And I think that involves some French clubs too. What is this all about, and is this a big deal? What's the name? Koveco or something like that?
Kovisok is the name of the financial control body that looks over it. Like the DNCG in France?
Yeah.
And I don't even know if they have one in the Premier League. They must. But basically, all right, I don't want to get into one of those long football accounting lectures that Craig Burley doesn't like, but because I know he's an avid listener to the show. But basically, it's this. When a club buys a player, let's say I buy a player for $100 million, I buy him from your club, and I give him a 5-year deal. So in my books, I take a 20 million pound charge every year that he's under contract, right? I spread the cost of signing him over the 5 years. In your books, you take the 100 million,
straight
away. So what happens is if I buy a 100 million pound player from you and you buy a 100 million pound player from me at the same time, we both have a 20 million pound charge on our books, but then we also have a 100 million profit because you booked the profit straight away. So look, we've both made 80 million.
Yeah.
So it's obviously just paper profit, but the reason it becomes important is because these clubs have balance sheets and they have rules where if your balance sheet shows losses of a certain level, then you, the owner, has to put in equity, right?
Yeah.
You have to put in money. So this allows them not to do it.
Exactly.
A lot of clubs do this, not just in Italy, but around Europe.
The Pjanic-Arthur swap as well?
The Pjanic-Arthur swap is a classic one because when you do swaps, the Danilo Joao Cancelo one as well, right?
Yeah.
With Manchester City. Obviously, City don't need to do this, but when you do a swap, you can put whatever amount you want. You can make, $250 million. Sold Danilo for $250 million. You know, another famous case that's most on the spotlight is Victor Osimhen going from Lille.
Slightly different because Lille got four very, very random players on the other way.
They got four random players who were all given slightly inflated, very inflated valuations.
Yeah.
So it is an accounting thing. It's been going on a long time. I don't know what's going to come because, look, Chievo, who were found guilty of this repeatedly, they faced so many charges that basically they went bankrupt as a result.
Mm.
You know, they were dissolved.
Yeah,
so I don't think it's going to happen, but I think they will get a big warning. They may get some sort of charge or some big fine. It's a really interesting issue, and I think a lot of times we talk about club spending, we lose sight of this is how it works for clubs, and there's reasons why sometimes certain transfer fees are what they are. Jules, you know my thoughts on the Ballon d'Or, but many are obsessed with it.
Me too.
A leaked document that's been doing the rounds on social media. It's some sort of screen grab or something. I don't know. It could have been somebody making it on his computer. It shows Lewandowski winning it, followed by Lionel Messi, Karim Benzema, and Mohamed Salah. No Jorginho. How seriously should we take it? Is it plausible? Is it real?
It is possible. Of course, Lewandowski might well have won
it. Is it France football to put it out so that we would talk about the Ballon d'Or some more?
It's not in their interest at all to do that.
Why?
Although the winners...
Why not? We wouldn't be talking about this now.
Well, we still do talking about it now. Even without the league, we were talking about it before.
We wouldn't
still
be talking. I read the quick hits. We wouldn't be talking about this.
Okay, maybe not for the league, but there's still a big, it's still a big conversation point because maybe you don't like it, others don't like it, but players love it, and it's very important
for
them. That's why I like it, because I think it's that important to them, and they all dream of winning it one day. That it's important. And
is this a plausible
finish? Is it possible? 1, 2, 3, Lewandowski, Messi, and Benzema, of course it is. I don't think leagues like that exist, but it might just be me. Although, now that all the votes have been cast, the winners know or will know very soon that they've won, because France Football has to organize all the photo shoot and the ceremony and everything for November 29th when they revealed who the big winner is. So sooner rather than later, players will know, the sponsor will know, because, you know, if your sponsor is Adidas or Nike or Puma or New Balance or whoever, obviously it's a big thing for them, and they also need to get organized for the photo shoot and all of that. So at some point soon, people will know, and we might know as well, off the record, before it's announced, if it's Lewandowski, Benzema, Messi, Jorginho, Marcotti, Lawrence, or whoever is the winner.
I wasn't on the 30-man shortlist.
I think I was, maybe. I need to check. FIFPro and the European leagues have issued a joint manifesto this week, Gab. What is it all about, and does it matter again? I suspect it's got something to do with the World Cup every 2 years. Let me guess.
Less so. I think it's more to do with governance.
Okay.
So FIFPro is the players' union. European leagues is this organization which includes, you know, the Premier League, La Liga, all like of Europe's top leagues. I think essentially they said these are our priorities. We want to speak in one voice. Obviously, UEFA represents them in you know, the more general conversation. But they wanted to find common ground. I don't have a problem with it. I think it is a lot. It's very political, very flexing. I think both have an interest in avoiding something like a Super League, obviously. Both have come out and talked about the importance of having their voice heard. And, you know, with regards to the leagues, opinion is going to be divided, because in a lot of places you could say, all right, you guys are the leagues. You're represented by your FAs. Yeah. You've got situations like here in England where the Premier League is far more powerful than the FA, and they can kind of bully the FA because the Premier League bring in the money, right?
Yeah.
The league say, we bring in the money, not the FAs, right? So, you know, we should have more of a voice. FIFPro is slightly different because it's a players' union. I still think players have a lot less power than they do compared to American sports, for example. And I'd love to see them getting better organized in a way that makes them more of an active part of the conversation. But there's 101 reasons. That's a conversation for another time. Jules, it's coming. Second edition of ESPN's Battle of the Leagues. For those who don't remember, there's 8 of us. Each one of us takes charge of a league. 2 groups of 4. They're going to be FIFA EA simulations.
Yeah.
We pick the lineups. We pick our squads and players from our leagues. I'm representing the Bundesliga. You represent Ligue 1. Last time, you and I got to the final.
Yeah, and Ligue 1 won. It was a great final.
It was a comeback win.
It was a comeback win right at the end as well. And we're so excited in Ligue 1 to go again, try to regain the title, We'll have a lot of experience, youth, a lot of talent. A son, Lionel Messi, now is obviously playing for us. So bring it on.
what bugs me is we got drawn in the same group. You know, both finally. That's not really fair. But for the you look out, there'll be much more about this coming out across all ESPN platforms. But basically, Bundesliga, Ligue 1, we got drawn with La Liga as well. Yeah, and MLS, managed by one Nadim Onua.
Indeed.
In our group, the other group is the Premier League with Mark Ogden.
just a good laugh.
He's going to underachieve again. And then they've got Serie A, they've got the Dutch Eredivisie, and they have Liga MX. So look out for that.
Former Rangers and Everton manager Walter Smith has passed away at age 73. Gab, you got to know him a little bit.
I did. There was a period I was just starting out. There were a whole bunch of Italian players who moved to Rangers. Lorenzo Amoruso, Porrini, Marco Negri, young Rino Gattuso as well. So back then you had a lot of access. He was always very, very kind, very, very lovely. Just a really nice man who always took the time to talk to you. He did not go and, like, you know, have any airs about him at all. I stayed in touch with him a little bit. Afterwards, he went to Everton, of course, where he had this assistant named Archie Knox. And because Walter was such a nice guy, afterwards, if you had to go and, you know, give your players the hairdryer, a lot of time, Walter would just be like, all right, lads, disappointing defeat today. Archie wants to have a few words. And he'd let this his assistant, Archie Knox, would go in and he'd just go
mental.
Go demented in there, like shouting at everybody. And then he'd leave and then, you know, come back. Classic good cop, bad pop.
And one of the greatest British managers of all time, for sure.
We're going to be back on Monday, Jules. Big, big weekend coming up. A lot of stuff to go through. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.